And welcome back to Earth First Radio. This is Uncle Dennis with the second half of our show for today. All right, let's get right into news from around the world. Let's go to Russia. 91 large forest fires are burning in the Russian Federation, and the incidence of fire is way up compared with that of last year. The most desperate and dangerous situation remains in central, northwestern Siberian and the far eastern regions of the Russian Federation. The Ministry of Russian Federation for Civil Defense, Emergencies, and Elimination of Consequences of Natural Disasters says that 839 fire spots have been registered, compared with 157 this time last year. As of July 26, 157 new fire sources were detected, compared with 37 fires during the same period last year, and the area damaged by fires so far this year is 586,153 hectares. That's approximately 2,262 square miles. Imercom of Russia, together with the Federal Forest Service, Ministry of Defense, and Ministry of Interior, are fighting forest fires on a daily basis. The Russian authorities have managed to localize most fires and avoid their spreading to human settlements. Air support is being provided, with 95 aircraft from the Federal Forest Service fighting against forest fires and conducting aerial reconnaissance. Sounds like it's kind of heating up over there in Russia. We also read that the Russian Army is taking an active part in conserving living nature. In a first-ever meeting of conservationists, Army representatives, officials from other government organizations, scientists, and journalists are beginning. A beginning was made last week towards a new society-wide agreement to protect Russia's environment. A landmark roundtable dedicated to the subject, Role and Potentialities of the Army in Conservation of Animate Nature in Russia, was held July 30th. The goal is to create a public agreement which will conserve Russia's environmental treasures. Despite the existence of serious contradictions and problems between environmentalists and the military, in the field of environmental protection there is a wide range of issues on which consensus can be reached among the military, the scientific community, governmental, and non-governmental environmental organizations. Serious prospects of collaboration between the military and environmentalists are indicated. The roundtable was organized by the Environmental Safety Department of the Armed Forces of the Russian Federation, the editorial board of the Kaznaya Zvezda newspaper, an international press club, and the Intergovernmental Financing Agency Global Environmental Faculties Project. Representatives of the State Committee for Environmental Protection of the Russian Federation, scientists, environmentalists, biologists, military equipment and technology designers, representatives of the Ministry of Defense in the Russian Federation, and different armed forces and representatives of environmental organizations took part in the meeting. The draft public agreement was developed by Global Environment Faculty, and the main idea of the agreement is to consolidate efforts of the entire society for conserving national living nature in Russia. And let's move to Indonesia. Although the intensity of logging within the study area has been reduced, and I believe they're studying a research area in the Gunung Lauser National Park, where I believe they're studying orangutans. There are over 100 loggers working inside the study area, down from nearly 200 at the height of the crisis. Within the study area, there are 24 logging camps and 20 rails. These are wide trails with lubricated wooden crossbars for transporting logs. Some of these rails extend well over 1 kilometer into the study area, and most have side branches. The sounds of chainsaws indicate that intensive logging activities persist in the surrounding area well within these Indonesian national park boundaries. When logging was most intensive inside the research area, we lost many trees in 2 of the 3 most important food species for orangutan. In the area along the river, all of the Nisia aquatica trees were cut. The orangutans in Suwak, that's the area of Indonesia, regularly use tools to extract the nutritious seeds from the tough casing and irritating hairs of the Nisia fruits. The loss of trees along the river and in one swamp area represents a half to two-thirds of all the Nisia trees in the study area. In another area in the southwest of the research area, many of the large Sandoricum barracudas Caranium trees were cut, representing a third to a quarter of the trees within the study area. Each of these is a major food source for orangutans during its fruiting season. As the individual orangutans in the study population have home ranges that extend well beyond the research area, the effect of losing trees outside the research area is equally alarming. Thanks in part to letters written by concerned outsiders, there was a series of meetings between those responsible for the logging and authorities from the 18th to the 23rd of June. No arrests were made, however, but the authorities and loggers reached an agreement. As part of that agreement, the loggers were allowed to take the timber from trees that had already been felled, but they were to stop cutting live trees, and their activities in the research area were to cease by the 29th of June. The parties involved in the logging also made demands regarding provision of previously promised development assistance for neighboring villages. The local development agencies and the Leuser Development Program agreed to maintain a dialogue about these issues. The available undisturbed habitat for orangutans, tigers, sun bears, and other wildlife in Indonesia continues to diminish. No action was taken to provide enforcement of existing laws regarding protection of the national park, and the loggers still do not fear arrest or punishment for their illegal activities. This is especially troubling, given the concern that others may attempt to copy the actions of former logging operations to gain attention from the government and development agencies. There is nothing to prevent more of them from moving into the research area again, and no protection for the local wildlife. These folks are asking that you write letters. If you'd like further information, here's a website you can visit, www.duke.edu/tildemym1/suaq.htm. That's www.duke.edu/tildemym1/suaq.htm. Bad news for the orangutans over there. Let's move to China. Another issue that was a hot topic last year was logging. Last summer, as floods raged and Uncle Dennis reported, the State Council, China's cabinet, issued an order banning logging in the Sichuan province and other parts of central China. Clear-cutting had contributed to flooding because it causes massive soil erosion. The Yangtze used to be a clear river but is now muddy year-round. While logging ban seems to be working in Sichuan, in other areas it is violated with impunity, another government report found. That study by the Forestry Department of China this month found that attempts to stop illegal logging in 7 provinces had been endangered by corruption. Checks in 12 districts in Hebei province, for example, showed that only 20% of the logging companies had the necessary permits. Checks in other areas revealed that logging companies were using bogus or expired certificates to log in restricted areas. Moving to Canada, Pooley Island on British Columbia's central coast is key to the salmon bear stronghold of the Great Bear Rainforest. Pooley Island has runs of pink chum and coho salmon and serves as habitat for the spirit bear, a rare white phase of the coastal black bear, and is utilized by grizzly bears as well. We believe that Pooley Island might have the highest concentration of wolves in Canada. Pooley Island, spelled P-O-O-L-E-Y, is a spectacularly beautiful area with winding streams and rivers, big old-growth spruce, delicate bog forests, and wetlands. Western Forest Products is planning to clear-cut 23 separate cut blocks on one Pooley Island watershed alone. WFP Western Forest Products already has flagging tape up where they plan to blast and bulldoze a logging road alongside a coho salmon river, and we've found several bear daybeds located within the logging road right-of-way. Please write or fax today to the British Columbian Premier Glenn Clark. Ask Premier Clark to protect Pooley Island, remind him that it is an important salmon-producing system and is habitat for spirit bears and grizzly bears. Ask the Premier to protect all other intact salmon-producing river valleys in the Great Bear Rainforest. Here's the address for Premier Glenn Clark. Legislative Buildings, Victoria, B.C. And here's the Canadian version of a postal code, V8V1X4. That's Legislative Buildings, Victoria, British Columbia, V8V1X4, Canada. That's the address for Premier Glenn Clark. Here's his fax number, 250-387-0087. That's 250-387-0087, or email to glenn.clark.office@leg.bc.ca. That's glenn.clark.office@leg.bc.ca. Moving down into the lower 48, and wild and free in the 21st century, it says. This is how we want our national forest to stay. Summertime is, however, when we expect a big push to make the recreation fee demo program permanent on all Forest Service, Park Service, BLM, and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service lands nationwide. The Recreational Fee Demo Program is the law which allows experimental public lands fee programs, including the Adventure Pass. Just what is at stake here? The commercialization of a full third of the landmass of the contiguous United States. Yes, the total land area managed by the four above federal agencies participating in the Recreational Fee Demo Program totals nearly 1 million square miles, equivalent to the total combined areas of California, Oregon, Washington, Arizona, New Mexico, Nevada, Utah, Idaho, Montana, or most of the U.S. west of the Great Divide. The Recreation Fee Demo Program was implemented by a rider on the 1996 Appropriations Bill without any debate in Congress or with the American public. The force is pushing for permanent authorization of public land user fees. The Clinton administration, the Republican Congress, the four land agencies I've mentioned above, as well as major recreational corporations, may well try to push their fee agenda through Congress with another appropriations bill rider, and that Interior Department appropriations bill is moving through Congress after the recess, in which case we'll have our work cut out to defeat it. We want you to talk to your Congress people right now. All right, and once again, August 14th is the nationwide day of protest against the recreational fee demo program. That's coming up this weekend. I want to let you know about the Forest Access Immediate Relief Bill, H.R. 2295. It was introduced by California Representative Lois Capps, or Lois Capps, I guess it's Lois, on June 21st. It would cancel the Forest Service's participation in the Recreational Fee Demo Program and boost Forest Service recreation funding by diverting $37.4 million from the budget allocation for the construction and maintenance of logging roads on National Forest timberlands. The beauty of the FAIR Act is it redirects federal funding from subsidizing logging roads, a program with very little public support, to boosting forest recreation budgets, which has broad nationwide support. Once again, that bill is H.R. 2295, and unfortunately, this bill may not get very far unless you act today. Get in touch with your representative and have them support H.R. 2295, co-sponsor it. The Forest Access Immediate Relief Act, or FAIR. And in some good news, REI, the Recreational Equipment Incorporated, a major recreation equipment manufacturer and retailer, has quit the Recreation Roundtable. Quote, "It has become apparent that our continued participation in the Recreation Roundtable caused confusion, as that organization is linked with the American Recreation Coalition, a major backer of the fee demo program." So that's some good news. Let's go to Michigan. The Northwoods Wilderness Recovery, David Zaber and Doug Cornett, filed an appeal to stop the 1,226-acre borrowed time timber sale on Michigan's Hiawatha National Forest. The borrowed time timber sale is within a non-motorized semi-private area adjacent to the Big Island Lake Wilderness, Scotts Marsh, and the Indian Wild and Scenic River Corridor. The area is part of a complex of wetlands that feeds rivers flowing into Lakes Michigan and Superior, including the Little Indian River and the Indian Wild and Scenic River. It also provides thousands of acres of habitat for rare or threatened species like the Canadian lynx, the eastern cougar, the eastern timber wolf, pine marten, northern goshawk, wood turtle, and others. The timber sale will also negatively impact recreation in adjacent areas. The Forest Service has not conducted an environmental impact statement for this timber sale. So please send an interested party letter supporting an appeal to Appeal Deciding Officer, 310 West Wisconsin Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 49885. That's Appeal Deciding Officer, 310 West Wisconsin Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 49885. If you'd like additional information, send email to Northwoods Wilderness Recovery. Their email address, DRCORNET, that's DRCORNET at up.net. DRCORNET at up.net. And we're talking about the borrowed time timber sale. And unfortunately, the Clinton administration has agreed to make enough timber available out of Alaska's Tongass National Forest to ensure a 3-year supply for a proposed veneer plant in Ketchikan, Alaska. The plant would be the cornerstone of forest operations for Gateway Forest Products, a Ketchikan company that is buying out the assets of timber giant Louisiana-Pacific Corp. The agreement was conveyed to Alaska's congressional delegation by President Clinton's chief of staff, John Podesta, during a meeting in Alaskan Senator Ted Stevenson's office. After the brief meeting, Stevens and his Alaska colleague, Senator Frank Murkowski, told reporters that while the administration did not agree to all they had wanted for the new company, it could usher in a new era of cooperation on the Tongass National Forest and a significant new business for Ketchikan, a town hurt by the shrinking of Alaska's logging industry this decade. "I saw an element of good faith here I haven't seen before," Stevens said. The state's all-Republican congressional delegation has been battling the Forest Service virtually since Clinton took office in January 1993 over the logging in the Tongass. Over the past 7 years, Tongass logging has dropped dramatically, and the two largest industrial operations, pulp plants in Sitka and Ketchikan, closed as markets dried up and environmentalists successfully campaigned to cut down the size of subsidized timber sales. And the mill closures prompted the Forest Service to cancel long-term contracts for as much as 450 million board feet of timber annually to support these plants. Government plans call for Tongass logging over the next decade at roughly a third the levels allowed just a few years ago. Further, a million or so acres once scheduled for logging have been set aside for wildlife protection. And the new forest plan has not gone unchallenged. The Sitka Conservation Society, Alaska Center for the Environment, Sierra Club, and the Wilderness Society have filed lawsuits against this new forest plan for the Tongass National Forest, which fails to consider adding new wilderness areas in any of its 11 alternatives. Under the current Tongass plan, 2 million acres of roadless areas, including 450,000 acres of old growth, are open to logging. The lawsuit calls for a stop of any plans to log the old growth until a wilderness review is completed. If you'd like more information, contact Mike Zensi at the Alaska Rainforest Campaign. Matt's number, 907-222-2552. That's 907-222-2552 for the Alaska Rainforest Campaign. Moving to Idaho, immediate action is needed to stop the Otter Wing timber sale. Road construction is taking place and logging could begin any day on the Otter Wing timber sale in Idaho's Nez Perce National Forest. The 694 acres of old growth is the last viable habitat for steelhead trout, bull trout, Chinook salmon, and West Slope cutthroat trout on the South Fork of the Clearwater River Basin. The Cove Mallard Coalition is asking for activists to call Supervisor Bernhardt. Supervisor Bernhardt's number is 208-983-1950, that's 208-983-1950, and tell him to halt the Otter Wing timber sale until the agency responds to the violation reports and the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals hears the case. Also call Forest Service Chief Mike Dombeck, his number 202-205-1661, that's 202-205-1661 for U.S. Forest Service Chief Mike Dombeck, and ask him to buy back the Otter Wing and the Mackie Day timber sales and honor his commitment to protect endangered species and water quality. And for more information, contact the Cove Mallard Coalition. Their email address, cove@moscow.com. That's cove@moscow.com. And the Western Colorado Congress recently drafted a letter to the Senate asking them to oppose the $2 million provision Ben Nighthorse, Senator Ben Nighthorse Campbell added to the Interior Appropriations Bill for clear-cutting aspen trees on Colorado's Mesa, Uncompahgre, Gunnison, and White River National Forests. The provision comes as a result of a request by the Louisiana Pacific Corporation, a major contributor to Senator Campbell's election campaign. That's right, America has the finest politicians money can buy. The rationale for this $2 million increase in logging subsidies is the imaginary forest health crisis and the disappearance of aspen across the West, which can only be remedied by clear-cutting. A report prepared by the Western Colorado Congress provides scientific evidence that you do not need to clear-cut aspen to regenerate the stands. Moreover, these funds are being appropriated for money-losing timber sales. A former Forest Service forester, Walt Rule, said, quote, "Aspen is almost always a below-cost sale." For more information, a copy of the letter, or any of the reports, please contact Matt Sura at the Western Colorado Congress. His telephone number, 970 970-256-7650. That's 970-256-7650. Or address your email to wcc@gwe.net. That's wcc@gwe.net. All right, moving to Oregon. What is it? Environmental assessment comments. When are they needed? By Wednesday, September 1st. Where are they going to go? They're going to go to the Clackamas District of the Mount Hood National Forest. What are we talking about? We're talking about the Mutt Project area. The Mutt Project is about 1 million board feet coming off of 147 acres of the lower Clackamas River. And talking about 59 acres of thinning and riparian reserves and about 0.6 mile of road construction. Here's a few little bits of information. The 59 acres of riparian intrusion includes an area saturated by seeps, springs, streams, and riparian vegetation. Timber harvest and road building in the 1950s were conducted throughout the riparian areas. The area is just now healing itself and should not be degraded once again. The Deforest Service is going to put 0.6 mile of new road construction in areas adjacent to riparian vegetation. Units 1 and 2 are both ancient landslide deposit areas. This is basically says it all. The possibilities for a major landslide under natural conditions in this area is high, but when you add that prescription of timber harvest, a 50% canopy cover, and road construction, the chance for failure goes way, way up. Having just recently walked the area, this reporter found one active slide less than a third of three-quarters of a mile from the project area. Within the Mutt area, units 1, 4, and 5 include documented sites of two rare coral mushrooms listed in Table C3 of the Northwest Forest Plan. Rumeria aeriospora was found in Unit 4 and 5, while Rumeria galantarantia was located in Units 1 and 4. The Deforest Service also found a rare gilled mushroom in Unit 5, but did not confirm the site due to the poor condition of the fungi. They do mention, however, that potential habitat exists in the project area. Also, a rare oceanic lichen is found throughout Units 1, 2, and 5. The species is dependent on the interior microclimates of clumps of trees, or in other words, they fare better in shaded areas. How will a 50% canopy removal benefit this species? Well, Uncle Dennis doesn't know either. The Columbia dusky snail was also found adjacent to Units 2 and 6. The obvious conclusion one can make from all the sensitive species found in the Mutt area is that it is blessed with diversity and doing just fine without man's help. The C3 standards and guidelines suggest that the mycological special interest area be established in order to protect areas with numerous rare sites. BARC's recommendation to the Deforest Service is to drop Units 1, 2, 4, and 6 from the project. Their mitigation efforts in the past, as well as the protection of species, have been woefully deficient, to say the least. We can't trust the current managers to protect these rare habitats adequately. Their site-specific buffers for fragile species will most likely assuredly be a joke. Industrial logging and road building are not compatible with anything, much less these at-risk populations. And this alert was prepared by John Rancher, also known as the BARC Mount Hood South Coordinator. Unfortunately, I do have a contact address here. Contact Jim Rice. His number, 503-630-6861. That's Jim Rice, 503-630-6861. This is in the Ranger District, I believe. You can also send comments to Christine Pazula, P-A-Z-Z-U-L-A, Acting District Ranger, Clackamas River Ranger District, 595 Northwest Industrial Way, Estacada, Oregon, 97023. Once again, that's Christine Pazula, Acting District Ranger, Clackamas River Ranger District, 595 Northwest Industrial Way, Estacada, Oregon, 97023. All right, the BLM has apparently decided not to honor federal Judge Dwyer's recent injunction and is allowing the Deer Mom timber sale on Oregon's Medford District to proceed, even though the survey and manage requirements for endangered species under the Northwest Forest Plan have not been fulfilled. A request for a temporary restraining order on Dear Mom and 40 other illegally awarded sales has been filed in federal court, but a ruling is not expected for several weeks. Dear Mom is in critical jeopardy. Earlier this week, the BLM allowed an estimated 7 truckloads of timber to be felled in Section 7 of Dear Mom, but now the BLM has decided to allow Superior Logging to resume cutting. Judge Dwyer's recent federal ruling has halted logging on 9 unlawful timber sales throughout the Northwest Pacific area and requires the BLM and U.S. Forest Service to notify the court prior to awarding another 100-plus timber sales that have been appealed by conservation group. Dear Mom falls within the definition of the injunction because key wildlife surveys mandated by the Northwest Forest Plan have not been done. Thus, a temporary restraining order is justified and hopefully will happen soon. I guess there was a rally August 10th at the BLM Medford District office to protest the sale. Didn't get any information about that. But please contact the administration in Washington, D.C., George Frampton. His number is 202-456-6224. That's 202-456-6224. That's the number for George Frampton, the Council for Environmental Quality. That's the point man for President Clinton. Also, Secretary Bruce Babbitt, Department of Interior Secretary, his number 202-208-7351. Once again, that's 202-208-7351. And remind them, if more trees are logged at Dear Mom, it will be a deliberate violation of the President's Northwest Forest Plan. And moving to California, California Governor Davis has named Kirk Markwald, a former Deputy Secretary of Resources under Governor Jerry Brown, and Humboldt County Supervisor Stan Dixon to 2 of the 5 open slots on the Board of Forestry here in California. The new appointees will get their first chance to improve forest protection in California at a meeting held a little while ago, apparently. Markwald, a San Franciscan who works as a consultant on energy issues, is a past member of the California League of Conservation Voters and a strong environmentalist who should be a strong vote for forest reform. Supervisor Dixon may be more problematic. While he has supported watershed restoration efforts and won some friends in the fishing community, he also appears to have ties to the timber industry. That's it for the news on today's, or whenever you listen to it, version of Earth First Radio. To get news announcements or comments from your bioregion to Earth First Radio, send us email at cruzef@cruzio.com. That's cruzef@cruzio.com. Or send your letters, donations, CDs, or cassettes to Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. That's Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Be sure to send those announcements at least 3 weeks in advance. Uncle Dennis absolutely has to have them, otherwise we give you announcements about comment periods that have already expired. Earth First Radio is broadcast live from Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM every Thursday at 8 p.m. Or if you're out of town, you can listen to Earth First Radio anytime on your computer on the World Wide Web at radioforall.web.net. That's radioforall.web.net. That is the number 4, and there is the number 4. You'll need a sound card in your computer, but the software you need is free on the website. Earth First Radio is being rebroadcast on a growing number of free speech and non-commercial radio stations. If you found us on the web, ask your local station to download and rebroadcast Earth First Radio. Our theme music was written and performed by Daryl Cherney off his CD Keep It Wild. Earth First Radio is affiliated with the Earth First Radio Network. I'm Uncle Dennis. Thank you for listening, and please tune in again.